So we have a pickup date, a tentative pickup date of January 6th,
January 6th.
2016,
Okay.
Wednesday morning, and it has to be in the morning.
It has to be in the morning.
So I have to drive out there from Boston, and I have to get there in the morning, like a 2-day shot. This is episode 38 of the Adventure RX podcast, and today we are talking all about the launch of our roadshow and the logistics that are making that a little bit more interesting, where we're going to be, what we're looking forward to, and some concerns we have as we prepare to get on the road in 2016.
You're listening to Adventure RX, an active prescription for the non-compliant.
Not fiery, not that terrible thing. Won't you talk me out of it? Not fiery, not that terrible thing. Won't you talk me out of it? Not fiery, not that terrible.
The Adventure RX podcast is a production of Living Vertical Studios. Visit livingvertical.org and sign up for our mailing list, because there you will find free events, movies, blogs, photographs, and more, all pertaining to the content and community that we have created as we are challenging the limits of diabetes through adventure. We would love to have you there. It's a great website. A lot of work has been done on it, and it is going to be getting better as we hit the road in 2016. And that is what we're going to be talking about to you today, because we are about 1 month away. Today is December 1st, 2015. And in just a little bit over a month, Stephanie and I are going to be making that move out on the road. And it's going to happen really fast. It's not going to be a gradual transition. And we're going to share with you a little bit about that today. But before we get into the episode, I want to start off by welcoming you and thanking you for taking the time to listen to the Adventure RX podcast. If you've never listened to this show before, we are exploring the role of adventure as medicine. Basically, the idea that the things we do and the challenges that we voluntarily take on, that they benefit us in a physiologic sense. And that is a journey that I'm exploring through my life with type 1 diabetes. That's the reason why I quit my job. This is something that I've done a handful of times, but most recently, why I'm moving my family onto the road in a 13-foot trailer, because of the fact that for me, I can see tangible benefits to my life all over the place when I am in a simpler, more challenging environment that has me more connected with the outdoors. It's something that's really important to me. And it's a concept that Living Vertical as an organization, as a blog, as a project, has really been built around. And so we're just exploring that concept through my story and my family as we're living on the road, and also through the people that we encounter, because the surprising thing is that there are more of us that have this empowered, active, get after it mindset in the type 1 community than, you know, one would have originally thought. And so I'm interested to be able to share that with you. Pretty much since the last episode, I have been just focusing on getting everything cleared out and getting things pared down to the bare essentials that I know I'm going to need when we're on the road, so that I can actually start organizing and saying, here's what's coming with, here is, you know, what I can't bring with me, and kind of making a real tangible list of things that are going to be organized for the upcoming trip. One of the things that I had to do was downsize some of the photographic prints that I made from some of the expeditions that Living Vertical has been a part of over the last couple of years. And since obviously in a 13-foot trailer, we're not going to have any space to hang those up, well, I wound up auctioning them off on our Facebook page, which, if you haven't liked us on Facebook, we are facebook.com/livingvertical. And it was awesome. We had folks take the prints in pretty short order. We didn't have anything left over, and we were able to make a little bit of money to help us keep doing the work that we're doing. Some folks have actually asked if we have additional prints for sale, and the ones that I auctioned off were actual physical prints of my photos that I had in hand, so I autographed them personally, and I sent them to the folks that won. However, we do have photo prints for sale. If you visit livingvertical.org, there is a, right on the homepage there, there's a very obvious photograph, the Milky Way shot that everybody seems to enjoy the most out of my photos, where you click on that and you can go to our online store through Society 6 and you can order any number of the different prints of the photographs that I've shot. And there's, I want to say somewhere around 30 different photographs that I have up there, and you can get them framed, no frames, just prints, small, large canvases. However you want to configure them, they do a wonderful job with the printing. And I'm a little bit sad to see that that I couldn't bring my photos with me, but I'm going out there to capture more photos, and I don't want to be held down by physical prints when I'm not living in a space where I can really prioritize collecting art. So I'm out there to make art. That's the goal of this Adventure RX Roadshow in 2016 as we hit the road. It's not necessarily to accumulate the art, but to accumulate the experience in real time and then make art from that for other people who don't have the opportunity to experience it the same way that I do, or maybe somebody who's taking a vacation from experiencing the adventure, because I certainly can appreciate that. So having said that, I also want to make you aware of the fact that, you know, things are changing a little bit here because of the logistic pressure that is on me. Everything is kind of in a state of flux here, and it's difficult for me to make time to watch Lilo because Stephanie is working more now that I'm working less. And so I'm watching our daughter and I'm trying to record and get things ready. And, you know, a big part of this entire process is what is happening with Living Vertical, what's happening with the podcast, and what is happening with our YouTube channel. So as much as I want to focus on creating, I also don't want to get so bogged down with creating that the logistics that are necessary to get us on the road and get this next phase of our work launched, have that be compromised. So one of the things that is probably going to happen, I anticipate after December, we're probably going to conclude this second season, if you want to call it that, of the Adventure RX podcast, to give Stephanie and I some time to get out on the road, get moved in, and to just let it breathe a little bit. Because I think sometimes when you step away from something and it has an opportunity to breathe, then it has an opportunity to grow. And so that's what I'm going to be doing probably at the end of December. So we have four or five more podcasts that are going to be coming along, but I want everybody to understand, because the first priority that I have from a creative focal standpoint is going to be more visual stuff that I'm creating initially. And I've kind of moved over to YouTube a little bit, not to the exclusion of the podcast, but I'm starting to dip my toe in the water. We actually made our first 8 cents on YouTube. And so the fact that there is the opportunity to monetize that is very attractive. And honestly, that's where a lot of people are. And I want people to see the work that we're doing. I want them to see the adventure and share the adventure. And I want it to be bigger than just like, here's how you check your blood sugar. Here's how you put in a sensor. I want it to be about the adventure, because what we're doing isn't just about, it's not about diabetes. It's about the places we're taking our diabetes. It's about the things that the challenge of diabetes has made us appreciate and pursue. That's the whole point of it. So it does involve diabetes, of course, but the visual component of our adventure is something that I think is more suited to YouTube than podcasting. And so there is going to be a focus that is going to happen there to make that transition. And so I want you to know that, you know, if this is something that you enjoy and appreciate, that that's a place where you're going to be able to get some of the content that you may be missing from the podcast while we take a little break there for the couple of months in the new year to get ourselves reacquainted with a new living style and situation. That if you follow over to YouTube, youtube.com/livingvertical is where you can find us, and also on social media, and of course on the website, livingvertical.org. We have all these methods where you can connect with us, but I want everybody who listens to the podcast to understand that this is a transition period for us and that we have to be focused in our transition. Otherwise, we're just going to do a mediocre job of everything, and I really don't want to do that. And so in the process of starting to look at YouTube and what it can offer us and what it can offer you in terms of being able to visualize what we're doing, I'm really interested in kind of getting more acquainted with video making and camera setups. And that's something that I actually just wrote a blog about recently at livingvertical.org, which you can check out if you visit livingvertical.org/blog, because I am trying to figure out what is the best camera. And I'm not going to go into too much detail about that here, because it feels kind of weird to be spending a lot of time on a podcast talking about cameras, because they're inherently different senses. And the cross sense discussion, I don't know, at least at this point in my life, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense. But I'm trying to decide between whether or not I want light and portable with a little bit less in terms of resolution and quality, or if I want a little bit heavier and being able to shoot 4K. And I know that 4K in and of itself, ultra high definition, you know, there's diminishing value because there aren't even a lot of television sets that play 4K, let alone, you know, computers and mobile devices. So the work that we're going to be putting out on YouTube, a lot of it may not be worth it to have the higher resolution, but it's something that I've been struggling with and trying to work through, and something that you might enjoy giving some input about. And you can tweet at me if you have ideas about, you know, video and photo solutions at Living Vertical. You can express your opinion there. So that's a little bit of what's going on and what's going to be going on with us. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I'm glad you're along for the show. Let's get into the conversation that I started to have with Stephanie the other day, as we're trying to figure out how the logistics and the launch are looking for our roadshow coming up in 2016.
Since I'm going to be trying to work that first week, like, I think we should probably try to bump it out. Even though, I mean, regardless, you're going on your own to pick it up. Right?
Yeah, that was
the plan. And that's still the plan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the plan. Maybe not a good plan, but that's the plan. The challenging part of this is that when we pick up the trailer, that's when, like, the move occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're not going to go out, pick up the trailer,
and bring it back here.
Bring it back to Massachusetts, then load it up. It's like,
you're going to get the trailer and bring it somewhere, and then wherever you decide to bring it, that's where I'm going to fly out and meet you with Lilo.
Yeah, and that's where our new life of
adventure awaits.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, where are we picking it up from?
Minnesota.
I keep thinking Montana.
Yeah, nothing against Montana or Minnesota, but I would be really happy to be picking it up from somewhere that's
Minnesota.
I mean, it would be really nice to be able to pick it up from somewhere closer where it wouldn't be prohibitive to bring it back. Like, if we were picking it up in New York, for example, we could just drive it back, and then we'd have a little time to move in slowly, but it's all the way out in Minnesota, and I don't want to spend the money to come all the way back, load it up, and then drive all the way back out to wherever else we're going. Also, it's cold. Minnesota is really cold in January, but that's not even the biggest concern that I have, because we are not going to bring the trailer back to where we currently are in Massachusetts so that we can gradually load it up and try things on for size and see, does this fit? Does this work? Do we want more of this, less of that? I am going to pack all of our stuff that is going to live in the trailer into my CRV and drive out there. And when I pick up the trailer, the stuff that's in the CRV, that's the stuff that we're going to be bringing with us. And that's that. There's no back and forth. There's no loading up, trial and error. That's it. I guess looking on the bright side, that means that if something really unfortunate were to happen to the trailer, we could collect all of our possessions, put them in the CRV, and just head on down the road and not have to leave extra stuff behind in the trailer because it wouldn't fit in the car. So that, I guess, is a little bit of a safeguard, but it's still pretty scary to us.
Question also, since now we think we're going to stay on the southeast for the winter, cost-wise, what is the greater cost? You driving out there to pick it up and driving it south, or them shipping it closer?
That's a good question.
So you should, it's like, is it going to cost more for you to drive out there to pick it up and then drive east again? Because it wouldn't have cost more for you to drive out there, pick it up, and then continue on west, since we were going to be driving out west anyways. But now you're going to be going out west and north, then south and east. So, like, you're basically, like, circumnavigating half of the country just to pick up this trailer.
After the meetup in the Red River Gorge, I kind of got this idea that I wanted to explore the southeast a little bit more, and that maybe the early spring, late winter would be an okay time to do it. But we still have to work those logistics out a little bit before we solidify that as the plan, because as you can hear, it may not be the most workable idea for our first place to settle down while we're on the road.
Yeah, find out what the cost is for them to ship it somewhere.
Hi, David. My name is Steve Riker. We may have spoken earlier this morning about the date for my trailer pickup.
Yes.
I was wondering, I had a couple of questions. The first is it possible to do something completely different and just ship the trailer?
Sure. Let me grab your order. Here we go. We can work out delivery if you want to, or either way.
Yeah. Cost.
What is the additional cost for delivery?
It
would be to Massachusetts.
To Massachusetts, okay. Massachusetts, you guys are zone 5. Let's see, 13 foot. It'd be just under $2,000, $1,995.
So I think given that, we'll probably not opt for the shipping. I would like to change the date if we could by 1 week. If we could bump out to Wednesday the 13th, just because my wife is going to be working for that first week of January. So if we could bump out to the 13th, then that would be, and we could do the morning.
Okay, and then that way she can come with.
Well, she'll probably have the baby. She's actually probably going to fly out and meet me, but one way or the other.
Okay.
One way or the other, we'll figure that out.
Okay, yep, we can do the 13th. That's not a problem.
So do you hear what just happened there just a couple of seconds ago? Everything is kind of a long story. There's no easy way to explain to people that, like, my wife is a flight attendant and she's across the country, but she's bringing my daughter out, and then we're going to meet in Vegas, but we're in Minnesota and we're picking this trailer up, you see. Oh, and when you ask me what I do for work, well, I'm like a climber and a photographer, and I'm I do some audio work and some video work, and I do some writing, and I run a website, but I don't actually make a lot of money off of that, so I have to get contract jobs to do other things, and I'm a climbing guide as well, right? Everything is a long story, and sometimes it feels like there's no point in even trying to explain that. And that's something that I've been struggling with even with the podcast, because I really have to make firm decisions about how I'm spending my time, now leading up to this move, because everything needs to come together by a very specific date. And if it doesn't, there are going to be very specific repercussions from that. And I have a feeling that that's going to remain the same when we're living on the road, that we're going to have to make decisions to prioritize things and say, we're going to do this and we're not going to do that. And there's just not going to be enough time to do everything. Because when you're living on the road, it's harder to just kind of flippantly do things, because you don't just go over here and work on your computer a little bit. You're in a space where you have to dedicate space, like half of your living space, just for one or two people to sit down around a computer and have a conversation. Whereas, you know, in a larger living space, it's just like, okay, well, let's have a chat and then we'll go in the kitchen and make dinner after that. Here, it's like, we're going to set up our computer and then we have to put everything away and organize everything so that we can take out the table and set that up for dinner. And it's a little bit different. So I'm questioning myself about the amount of time that I'm putting into everything and trying to make sure that I put the right amount of time and make the right decisions with everything moving forward.
No, no. What it is, there's a 30-day travel permit that's in the back window.
Gotcha.
And that's what you'll have when you pick up the trailer as well. It's a 30-day travel permit. And then that's what it comes down to. You got 30 days to get it licensed and registered. And you're going to do it in Utah. But even if it's shipped to New York, I mean, it'd just be a matter of you sending the paperwork back, you know, whether your wife take care of it or whatever, that's not a big deal.
Okay. And do you know, just off the top of your head, is it possible to get the license? Like, because we were thinking about possibly going into the Southeast instead of, well, do we have to bring the trailer physically out to Utah in order to get that initial license in hand, or is that something that we can do by just flying out there, or by mail even?
Okay, we can. Now, I don't know if Utah, some states are in are what's called an inspection state, where they want to see the trailer at the licensing bureau. If Utah is not an inspection state, then, yeah, if you want to pay for the trailer in advance, then we can, as soon as the trailer is paid for, we can issue the paperwork for it, and you can go ahead and get a, you know, get a plate and come with a plate if you want to.
Okay. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, because I know the county that I am in Utah, like, you don't even have to have a muffler on your car, and it'll still pass inspection. So my guess is that they're a little more lenient there. The short answer seems to be that it is doable to get a license for the trailer without physically having to appear in Utah with that trailer. But it means more money up front, and it means a lot of red tape at a time when less red tape would be really awesome. So now Stephanie and I have to hash out whether or not we go east or west, because I kind of have my heart set on going into the Southeast, and as you can hear, she's a little bit more for going west.
Frozen times going east is the weather is less predictable and it gets colder. It has been colder the last several years. We can get to warmer weather much faster on the west, because like if we're in Zion and it's cold, like we know what like Red Rocks is like in January and February. It's still gonna be warm in California in January and February,
right? But
you just want me to agree to the east.
No, I'm just trying to like look at the flip side of that, which is that like I don't want to go somewhere and not be able to climb.
So yeah, that could happen in the southeast.
Because
I feel like that's more likely to happen this summer.
If it's wet and it snows, even if it's a little bit, you have 2 days minimum where you have to wait for everything to dry out. Yeah, I was just trying to get her to agree to go into the Southeast, but I wasn't done trying to push a little bit more, even though I knew that this was a discussion that I probably was not going to win.
So I guess the way I look at it is that, you know, either way there are pros and cons, but the issue with the Southwest and being like kind of on the run is that we're spending a lot more money now to go from like Zion to Vegas to Joshua Tree to Bishop to Zion. Like, that's not just like a car ride anymore, because right. now we have a trailer
right.
and we also have fees to like camp predominantly. So we need to find an area. I guess the way I look at it is,
but Joshua Tree has more BLM.
Well, there's the pit.
This is what my life has come to. I'm convincing my wife that we need to avoid being in Joshua Tree because we don't want to live in a place called the Pit for the winter. BLM land is land that you can camp on for free. There's no charge there. Of course, there are no facilities there, so it's not exactly the Taj Mahal. You have to really fend for yourself and be self-sufficient while you're out there. There's no electricity, there's no facilities, no bathroom, running water, etc. If you're lucky, some of the BLM land has toilets on it. And the specific area near Joshua Tree actually isn't BLM. It's called the Pit. And it's an area that was built and has actually been bought, I should say, privately by an individual to basically safeguard a small piece of land in order for climbers to come and camp there. And there is, it's just literally a pit in the dirt. And it's not like an awful disgusting pit, but at the same time, it's just kind of, you know, it's a place where most of the transient climbers in Joshua Tree will hang out for the wintertime. And we've spent a lot of time out there in the past, and it's awesome because you make really good friends. And you know, you hang around these old deserted outdoor couches, and it's very, well, it's got a lot of character, but at the same time, I feel a little bit weird about kind of pushing for living in a place called the Pit. Although, who knows? Maybe that would be kind of cool to be able to introduce the podcast and say Adventure RX coming to you from the Pit in Joshua Tree, California. I'm not close to the idea.
Which, I mean, you know what? If we make that decision to go to Joshua Tree and live in the Pit for the winter,
couldn't we also, like, go to Zeke's?
Seth's? Maybe. I haven't asked him.
I mean, we could ask
Seth. Hey, Seth, can we come camp at your place for the winter?
We could ask him. And maybe you could guide with him for a few weeks in the wintertime.
Idea.
So this is where Stephanie really won me over, talking about Joshua Tree and the idea that we could possibly hang out with friends. I learned since that we had this conversation that guiding probably won't be an option for me in Joshua Tree because my friend Seth, who runs cliffhangerguides.com, an awesome guide service out in Joshua Tree, Seth and his wife Sabra, they are amazing, amazing people, and just want to give them a little plug. If you are out in Joshua Tree, anywhere in Southern California, and you're interested in climbing in Joshua Tree, cliffhangerguides.com, you will not get a more authentic or a more outstanding experience anywhere. These two are super, super amazing. But the idea of being able to work with them, they already have people that are guiding for them. But I thought to myself, self, maybe I can trade a little bit of photographic work, some video work, some of the media skills that I have. Maybe I can trade something with them and have a chance to hang out there with them, kind of go back and forth living in the Pit, and spending some time in Joshua Tree. Starting to sound pretty good, honestly.
Because you're going to be real pissed if, like, we do all this to get the trailer out to the Southeast, and then it's like 30 degrees or, God forbid, 45 degrees, and your hands are cold, and your hands are too cold to climb because you don't like climbing in anything cooler than like 65.
And so that's what I get for having my wife on the podcast with me. I get called out in front of all of my followers and listeners for being a gargantuan pansy. And I want to just point out that it's not, you know, I can climb in the mid 50s before I start complaining. Okay. I'm not that big of a delicate flower, let's just say. But she had a point, and so I figured, let's really take a look at the weather. Let's see what the data says. And so we did. And basically, Stephanie won this argument, and I am pretty okay with it because being in Joshua Tree in the winter doesn't suck, and at the end of the day, we are going to have more costs to absorb if we have to leave different areas and chase good weather. And we have to be careful not to climb on sandstone after it's rained, because sandstone, I'm going to make a public service announcement if you don't know this already, sandstone, as beautiful as it is very, very, very fragile, especially after it rains. And so you have to give it several days of direct warmth and sunlight for it to dry out before you can just go back and climb on it, where other kinds of rock, you can just go back and climb on it the next day. So that was one of the things that I was concerned about. But end of the day, Stephanie won me over, and I think we are going to head out west on January 13th, 2016, which is the day that I will pick up the trailer in Minnesota.
I mean, I want to try to make sure Lila doesn't chase after scorpions and tarantulas, because...
Or snakes.
Because literally the only beings that she says hi to or goes up to are animals.
Yeah. But she knows, she's been doing better with listening, though.
Yes, so that's far. True.
So let's hope that continues.
So when we got to the zoo, it's like when you walk through the entrance, there's a little pond on the left. Or one of like the enclosures that have bison. It has bison and deer and ducks. When she saw like a deer by like the enclosure, she was like, walked over, hi! Like, waves at it. Hi! And she always does that with animals. She did it to the cows, too. Hi! The only time she says hi and waves is when it's to animals.
Huh. Well, we haven't... Has she actually been exposed to any of the less desirable, like, reptilian, poisonous, creepy, crawly things? I'm curious to see how she would react.
She's had, like, bees on her a couple times, like, where, like, things have landed on her. When she's, like, outside, and she's, like... She looks at it, and she tried to pet a bee once when it landed on her hand. Like, it landed on her hand, and she stopped and looked at it and was like, nice.
Oh, my goodness.
And at Massasoit, the same thing happened to her with the dragonfly. Like, a dragonfly landed on her, and she was just so excited. She, like, saw it on her, and she was like... like, her big smile that she gets.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, like, people can't hear the smile.
Yeah. She had this huge smile on her face and her eyes are all wide and was super excited that a dragonfly landed on her. And then she was completely crushed when it flew away.
Why does everything I love leave me?
So, I mean, dragonflies aren't really something to be afraid of. Bees... I guess that's debatable.
If she has a healthy, like, I want her to try to take the path of least conflict with animals, even the undesirable ones. But if she has
the
knowledge that they're not all like, her friend.
Tarantulas.
Tarantulas are
not
poisonous.
They're
not dangerous.
No, they're not poisonous. They're just creepy as hell.
True.
Do they bite? They bite, though.
I think they can, but most of them they have really small fangs that don't really do a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of anybody having issues with tarantulas. Yeah. The only time you really see them is when they're, like, half dead because they're done mating in the fall.
Right.
But, like, that's what I know of them.
They still skeeve me out, but I am going to try my best to, like, not project that onto Lilo so she's not afraid of them.
Yeah.
Scorpions, though.
Scorpions are worth scary.
Yeah.
Those are legit scary.
Those are worth the scare. It's like you would think that she would have, I don't know, like she's afraid of that stupid mouse toy at my brother's house.
Well, maybe that'll carry over.
Maybe. I hope. Maybe the way like the scorpions move will translate well to danger. And I think like the reaction to a rattlesnake's rattle, I'm pretty sure that's like an instinctual reaction because... I would hope it's an instinctual reaction.
But at the same time, too, like, we've spent a lot of time out in the woods and out in the wilderness.
And we've, like, seen them twice,
and, like, we've seen them a handful of times, and it's always in specific places.
I've never seen a scorpion alive in all the time we've spent in the desert. Yeah. I've only seen them dead. I've had tarantulas cross my path a couple times.
Yeah.
And... rattlesnakes just a handful of times.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just more worried about the times where she, like, runs ahead of us. you know, if she like hems across it before we do. But
we'll teach her the best we can. Yeah. That's all we can do. Keep an eye on her.
Mm-hmm. So that's like, because that's a hard thing to like teach a 18-month-old. You know.
But
it's that, teachable. Yeah.
That said, the highest rate of people getting stung, bitten, and having negative encounters with any type of animal, it's all 18 to 24 year old
males. That's true. So there's that. But
yeah, there's a little bit of hope in that. Yes, in that statistic.
Tell me that I'm still
alive, 'cause I. So there you have it. Our journey officially begins January 13th, 2016, picking up the trailer in Minnesota and then heading somewhere into the southwest. Southwest Utah, Vegas area is probably going to be our first real focal point. And then from there, potentially into Joshua Tree in the Southern California area. And somewhere between those points in Southwest Utah and Joshua Tree, SoCal, that's probably going to take us the majority of the way into April or so. So my hope is that we're going to be able to have some meetups along the way, that I'm going to be able to meet some of you, climb with you guys, hike, do all sorts of cool stuff. We're going to be announcing those events on the website. So if you haven't already, visit livingvertical.org, drop your name in the email, sign up so that you get updates when we publish blogs and videos. And again, it would be great to have you connected with us on social media, because as I have less time available and step away from the podcast starting in January, Facebook, Instagram, on Instagram, I'm at Living Vertical. And on Facebook, of course, facebook.com/livingvertical, and on youtube.com/livingvertical. Those are going to be the places where I'm going to be putting out more content until we get everything sort of situated. And one of the things that I'm hoping is to start doing the podcast in sort of dual format, where we have a video of the podcast as it's happening in real time, as well as the podcast that lives on iTunes and all the other aggregators for the podcast, so that we have sort of a different format that we can interact with you. So I would love it if you connect with us. If you have a question, hit us up on Twitter at Living Vertical. We'd love to hear from you. If you have input about tarantulas and scorpions and spiders, snakes and little kids in the desert, love to hear your stories about those things and what you're looking forward to and where you are, so that we can connect with you, have a meetup in your area, and we can push back against some of the challenging stereotypes that go along with having diabetes. Because I don't know about you, but I am not about to live my life in the shadow of a condition that most people don't understand, even people who spend their lives studying it. It's sort of an enigma, and the reality is, in my opinion, that diabetes is what we make of it. So this is what I'm making of it. I'm making it an adventure and something to do and a reason to get after it and to push back harder. I hope to see you out there. So that's all for now. You'll be hearing more from me on episode 39 of the Adventure RX podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss it or any of the upcoming episodes.